From the Media Factory in the South End of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview from the archives with Anne Lamott, the New York Times bestselling author of Help, Thanks, Wow, Small Victories, Stitches, Some Assembly Required, Grace, Eventually, Plan B, Traveling Mercies, Bird by Bird, Operating Instructions, and the forthcoming Hallelujah Anyway. She's also the author of several novels, including Imperfect Birds and Rosie. A past recipient of a Guggenheim Fellowship and an inductee to the California Hall of Fame, she lives in Northern California. Anne and I conducted this brief interview in 2013, soon after the release of her book, Some Assembly Required, A Journal of My Son's First Son. In Some Assembly Required, Anne Lamott enters a new and unexpected chapter in her own life, grandmotherhood. Stunned to learn that her son Sam is about to become a father at 19, Lamott begins a journal about the first year of her grandson Jax's life. In careful and often hilarious detail, Lamott and Sam, about whom she first wrote so movingly in Operating Instructions, struggle to balance their changing roles. By turns poignant and funny, honest and touching, Some Assembly Required is the true story of how the birth of a baby changes a family. I interviewed Anne Lamott on the day after her birthday, something I learned while reading her book in which she enjoys sorbet in a hotel room on her birthday in 2010. Because she was again on a book tour, I wondered, as you will hear, if she did that in 2013 as well. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
I wanted to start by wishing you a happy birthday. I realized
yesterday, thank you.
Yes, I hope you had some sorbet in your hotel room.
How do you know that? Did you read my my hotel bill? I had some sorbet and some vanilla for the first time, ice cream for the first time in 3.5 months. I had a little birthday sugar.
So it's the sugar. It's not the dairy. It's the sugar.
No, I have had a low sugar lifestyle for 3.5 months. And yesterday I got to have my birthday at the Philadelphia Free Library, which to me is like a cathedral and about as good as it gets. And then I came up to my room and watched CNN and had a little sugar.
Oh, yay.
Yay.
Well, good. Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I loved the book, Some Assembly Required. It feels a little bit like a journal through much of it, and I'm wondering if that's how it started, and if so, when in the timeline of Jax's first year did it actually become a book to you?
Sam writes a preface in the beginning that talks about how it was really never my idea, that my editor had suggested I write a follow-up to Operating Instructions, and I wasn't that gung-ho on it, but I asked Sam if he would do it with me, and as he writes in the preface, he was so pumped because he loves Operating Instructions so much and wanted to give Jax a book just like that for himself. So from the very beginning, it was going to be the subtitle was going to be A Journal of My Son's First Son, because Operating Instructions was called A Journal of My Son's First Year.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Now, okay, so I do remember the preface. I just couldn't remember if that was when they had just delivered or she was pregnant, or when did that sort of happen?
My editor asked me right before Jax was born
if
I wanted to, keep a journal.
Okay, great. Well, clearly Sam and Amy are amazing parents. I was wondering if they read along, and obviously they were helping you write it, or Sam was helping you write it. Did they get rights of first refusal on the stories that
Absolutely.
You tell?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not stupid. I write so much nonfiction that I have to be extremely careful not to invade anybody's space or privacy. I write, there's about 10% of my life or anyone else's life that I can write about. The rest is too intimate.
Yeah.
And I'm very fierce about that, and I always have been. And so I showed Sam and Amy everything as I went along. And then Sam contributed about, probably close to 20%.
Yeah, that was fun, reading his interviews and his entries. And Amy has an entry, too.
The email.
Uh-huh. Right. What is it like for you to have people, and I mean strangers, think that they know you because they've perhaps read your memoirs? Is that hard sometimes?
Well, it's very loving. It's mostly very loving, and people don't know me. They know the stuff I choose to share with them, and I'm very confident in that. So people say, oh, I feel like I've always known you. I feel like we're best friends. Well, that's very loving and sweet. And, you know, two or three people know me, like in everybody's life, that only a few people know me.
Yeah.
And because I choose to live that way. So mostly it's about just receiving people's love and prayer, and I love that. You know, that's just wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. It must be really nice when you make a connection with people because they know a little bit about you and
exactly.
And want to share something with you. So you just mentioned prayer. I wanted to ask you, how much do you and your non-spiritual friends, and I'm sure this varies from person to person, but how much do you talk about spirituality with your non-spiritual friends? Very much.
I only have a few really close friends that I would talk about it and about stuff with. And most of my friends have some sort of spiritual path, whether it's Buddhism or 12-step recovery. So it's not like we have discussions about it or arguments. The people that are religious, like I am, would talk in real intimacy about what our prayer life is like, or what we're going through, what we're feeling really tormented or stressed by. And then the other people, I have one friend who really just doesn't believe in anything at all except real life as it unfolds visibly. And so we talk at that level. You know, I don't have a trip I want to lay on her. I'm not trying to convert her or have her have some awakening according to what my sense of the world is. So it's probably just like you. You know, you have some people that are more conservative. You have people that are really, really interested in spiritual stuff, and that you can find really comical stuff to talk about. So it's probably just like your life.
Sure, I'm sure. All right, let's get back to Jax. This is a quote from the book, and I just loved this. A grandchild is like a fine jewel set in an old ring. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that, the meaning behind that. I just enjoyed that so much.
Well, thank you. Boy, I don't even remember writing it, but, you know, the family is the family, and our families are usually a mess. That's what most good writing is about the individuals, the very, very tragic and the very inspirational individuals in our families. And we all share the same burdens. We all share the same, you know, all families have mental illness or alcoholism or are disappointing or or take off, you know, whatever. And so I think we're really all in the same boat. But we have these families, and we all get so used to each other, and have for, you know, all my cousins and live in the same county where I live, and they all of a sudden a baby comes along for one of us, and it's like so great. It's so great because it's so fresh and it's so unique, and we don't know this person. We get to begin to know this person as they reveal themselves to us day by day. And so it is like a jewel, and it's got all these facets that you didn't carve, you didn't pick out from the catalog. And it's a new life that is, for some miraculous reason, part of yours to share in.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed reading, as I read the book, I really enjoyed recognizing the stages that Jax was going through, you know, stages that I had seen in my own children when they were little, and also seeing his own individual change and growth and your joy in that. And there's this one section that is so funny, and now I'm like looking for it, where you talk about his latest. Do you mind if I just read a really quick thing from you? Jax has gone bad. Now, instead of just reaching for your hands to shove into his mouth or to study, he reaches for your rings. He holds on to them. You can see the little wheels in his mind turning. He also does bracelets and watches. He's in gypsy mode. Watch your wallet. I remember
so
that stage, and it's so much fun to hear it in your words. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say I remember it with Sam, too, because it's so, you realize all of a sudden that there's more there than meets the eye, you know? That there's now they're scheming, and then eventually they start figuring out how to get away from you.
Yes.
You know, once they get their little bouncy seats and stuff, start trying to move away from you, you know, and experience the thrill of distance.
Which is like such
speed,
a cheat.
Distance and speed, yeah.
You know, parents wait for that moment when they can walk, you know, and then they realize, oh, they're just going to walk away.
That's right.
Or run away.
Yeah.
Okay, at one point in the book, you mentioned having, at this moment in time that you were writing this one piece, you mentioned having been lonely and between books and boyfriends. So as a writer, I wondered what you do to help yourself through the time when you're between books creatively. Do you do a lot of other things in between books?
Well, I really love Facebook now. I don't post stuff about my family or pictures or anything like that. I really do write pieces that are like small essays, and I really love that now. And there's actually two books I'm very, very drawn to and participating in, but it's been so crazy because Help Thanks Wow came out 6 months after some assembly, so I was on 2 3-week book tours in 6 months, and right. Now I'm on a third in another 6 months, so it's been a really challenging time.
Yeah.
For writing, but I always, if I'm at home, I always get my work done, and now I love Facebook and I love Twitter, so I have those that sort of tied me over.
Yeah, and you can do those in hotel rooms on tours too, I would think.
Oh, sure, you can do them on the plane. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, is Sam touring as well?
No, he toured in last spring with me though, and that was really fantastic to get to mentor my own kid and to be on stage with him everywhere, and for people just to fall in love with him and to know, because they've been watching him grow up in all these books all along, and to see what a strong, handsome young man he is and how he holds his own with me and
yeah.
how he's proud of me but kind of rolls his eyes at the same time.
Yeah, he seems like such a neat person, you know, reading about him. Obviously, you're biased and you're presenting him in a certain light, but
right.
just, you know, what a wonderful, wonderful spirit, I'm going to say, and just such a great dad, you know. He seems to really, right from the start, get so into just being with his son and being the best father he possibly can, which, you know, at 19, that's just amazing, you know, no matter
yeah.
what his own history was. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
true.
Yeah. One of the great lessons in all of your books, I believe, is to lean on friends. Don't try to bravely go it alone, but, you know, your friends want to be of use. And I just wonder if you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, it's the real basis of my spirituality is the quality of my friends that they have. It's been my gift ever since I was a young girl to have really unbelievable friends and just the cream of the crop. And so I know that because of them, no matter what happens, I'll never be alone.
Mm.
And nothing so bad will ever happen to me that their companionship and generosity and loyalty won't be enough. So for me, it's the deepest circle of spirituality is the little group around you, you know, like your pit crew.
Yeah.
Everyone I know that's doing well in the world has two or three friends without whom they could not live and without whom almost nothing would make sense.
Yeah. I enjoyed sort of, you know, reading about those friendships, and some of them make multiple appearances in this book. And I'm not remembering the name of the woman who you call her something like Horrible Bev or something.
Horrible Bonnie, yeah.
Horrible
mentor,
Bonnie,
yeah.
That's so much fun. So do you give her the lowdown on before you write the book, or do you change her name, or what do you do?
Oh no, because I only wrote, you know, I wrote the stuff I wrote was her great spiritual
Absolutely.
Wisdom. And her great love for me, and she's just such a brilliant, sweet mentor, and I knew she would love it. And
yeah.
then I think it's dedicated to her.
Yeah.
Oh, it's dedicated to Amy. The
it's
one before,
yeah.
one of them, maybe it's Help Thanks Wow, it's dedicated to Bonnie, but she would always trust me completely.
Yeah, okay. So the structure of this book, you have sort of journal-like entries and your interviews with Sam, and then Sam has his sections that he's written entirely. There are emails. I'm wondering how difficult you found it to balance all of this when you put it all together, and how much did you work to balance the voices in the book?
Well, that's a good question. I just tried to get as much material from Sam as I could, but he was 19 and then 20 and a full-time student and a full-time father, but he was the one who'd wanted to write it, so I'd always be mildly mad too, because
right.
I would get my work done. I'd be journaling and getting it right. You know, I'd always write it too long. Like with everything I write, it comes out too long, and I'd shorten it, and then I'd say, Sam, you have to give me that story you told me. You have to put it in paper. It has to be in your words. It has to be by email or a set piece. And then, you know, he complained. It was just like having a kid in high school again, and I'd bribe and threat and threaten, and then the material would come in, and I would be blown away by how gorgeous it was.
Right.
And then I'd forgive him, and then we'd start up again.
It sounds a little bit like his getting the tux fitted before the wedding. You know, it's like he's going to come through, but he's going to drive you crazy in the meantime.
He's going to drive me crazy, and he's going to get it done about an 20 minutes before the wedding.
Yeah, it's always. Like the kid who says to get the dog and he promises to feed it, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. But then if you look at the most beautiful stuff in the book is, to me, is the Sam emails and interviews. The stuff he says about what parents need to do with their teenagers, to me, is very profound. And the stuff that he writes about his own father and his relationship to him on Father's Day, as well as to his own little baby, to me, is the most beautiful stuff in there. Mm-hmm. So it all worked out. And, you know, all writing's hard, and it goes badly most days.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I said earlier something about his, you know, no matter what his background was, and all I was saying was that he was raised by a single mom, and yet here he is, like, being such an incredible, intuitive, wonderful father. But it is lovely that he's created this relationship with his father as he's gotten older, and that was really mm-hmm. wonderful to read about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I don't know if it was my imagination, but it seems in the book that as Jax grows and becomes stronger and more obviously healthy, you get funnier. And I was wondering if that's about less worry and less exhaustion helping to care for a newborn. Was that you relaxing a little bit into the material, or am I imagining this completely?
Oh, I don't know that you're imagining it. I can't really speak to it, though, because I actually don't remember. I've written a book in between, and but you know, when you have a little baby, an infant, they're just so fragile, and then I remember with Sam, after about 3 weeks, I felt like an old pro, like I was slinging hash in a diner, instead of thinking that it was like a porcelain plate from the Ming Dynasty. You all of a sudden realize they bounce, they're soft, they're flexible, they're resilient, and so that's probably true. And the first few couple months especially were incredibly hard. You know, these two extremely young people with an infant and a lot of stress on the relationship. And I think I was holding my breath a lot, even as I was kind of being my own birth coach and saying, breathe, breathe. And yeah. I was trying to get my own work done. And it's just hard. Kids yeah. are really hard. They're such a blessing, and they're so hard,
yeah.
and we're so vulnerable. So it would make sense if it does get funnier as I go along.
It did for me. You know, the beginning was very poignant, and I was so worried about them along with you.
Uh-huh.
But then
yeah.
the second half of the book, I'm laughing out loud. So
okay. Thank you.
And what does the following quote from the book bring to mind for you generally? It's a book. It's a line that I think probably you use a lot. But you said, "This is life on life's terms, not life on Annie's terms," and I really liked that.
Oh, I think the whole book is about how we learn to let go, how we unclench, you know, or how we clench and then we remember to release. How we can either accept and bless what's happening, or we're going to be driven crazy trying to control and manipulate the world and everything in it to our way of thinking. So the whole book really is about learning to stop controlling, stop fixing, stop saving and rescuing. Even the long passage in India is about learning, I can't fix or save anybody, really not one person.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest lesson I think we learn. So life on Annie's terms would be terrible anyway. It's just that's my default position, is that's what I want. I'm just like stamping my foot. I want people to be well and safe and to make good, sound judgment. And you don't always get that. And yet you can be happy no matter what somebody else is doing.
Yeah, yeah. You did have that lovely section in India, and also the section where you travel to Europe with friends. And both of those are very interesting, because it's this part in the book where you take yourself away from Jax. Well, it's a part of your life where you were away from him. But in the book, you know, you kind of show us your own growth apart from your, you know, your family and Sam's family. And that was really fun. That was really fun to,
oh,
to
thank
see.
You.
Because obviously they're so omnipresent in your mind. So
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but I went 12, however far away India is. I was there for 10 or 11 days, and then I was in Eastern Europe. I kept a journal of when I went to the concentration camp and when I went to the Solidarity monuments in Poland, and it just all deepened and widened and made more expansive my sense of life. And so I just want to share that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, with the little baby, you're kind of hovered over them all the time, watching their every move and every development. And so it's so trippy to go see the big, messy, wild, shadowy, gorgeous world.
Right. And you very obviously look at children around the world differently, having this new baby in your life.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Yeah.
You performed the ceremony when your brother got married, and I'm wondering, how long have you been performing weddings? And that must be wonderful.
I think I've been doing weddings off and on for about 20 years. I really love it. I haven't done that many, maybe five or six, but maybe a few more. But, you know, you just go up to the county seat and you get your one-day license, and you're imbued with the power of the state for exactly one day. And then I always do a kind of, you know, nobody wants a straight Christian wedding. They want like a wedding that reflects their core beliefs and their personalities and their love for their family, and trying to include the ancestors who may have passed fairly recently or couldn't be there. And so I really love weddings.
Yeah.
And it's always been really, really fun for me to officiate.
It was fun reading about your brother's wedding. Just a couple last questions for you. First of all, I loved the line, grandchildren grow you. That was wonderful. You know, and obviously children grow you too, but you don't think about it in those terms. So I guess that's not really a question. I just liked that line.
Oh, thank you.
My last question for you, Annie, is I'd say that you're sort of famously insecure, at least a little bit. So I guess my last question is, can you offer some advice for new grandparents when they get their feelings hurt?
Well, I think I'm famously insecure, and I'm also famously strong and bold. I have a very bold life. I mean, it's my 14th book, you know, and
yeah,
my 20th book tour, so for paper and hardback. So my advice is that, like what Woody Allen said before I turned on him, that 80% of life is just showing up, and you show up and more will be revealed. I would advise grandparents to buckle up. I would advise parents that they're not in charge, that it's not their baby, and the more they act that way that it is, or that they think it is, the more people are going to be annoyed with them and withhold the child.
Yeah.
So it's in everybody's best interest to just grow up yourself and to release, release, release. And of course you want to do everything you can to help, but that a lot of the time our help is not helpful, and to take our cues from the child's parents. And if you breathe, if you pray, pray. And if you meditate, meditate, and stay as well as you can, because it's a wild ride. It's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And like real life, it can be a little hard sometimes.
Wonderful. Okay, great advice. All right, so the book is Some Assembly Required, A Journal of My Son's First Son, Anne Lamott with Sam Lamott, and published by Riverhead Books. Thank you so much for speaking with me today. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I enjoyed it too. Thank you.
From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington. Streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. That was an interview with Anne Lamott. You can learn more about her work on her Facebook page and on Twitter. This week's Write the Book prompt is to write about how you would spend your birthday if you were on a book tour. Good luck with your work in the coming week. And tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. I would love your feedback about the show. Let me know if you'd like me to interview certain authors or if you have events to announce. Be sure to tell your friends about Write the Book and about the podcast site, writethebook.podbean.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Google Play and all the places where you can find podcasts. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates, and you can also access the podcast at my own website, SheLaughsWithoutUs.com. If you like the show, please rate it in iTunes, like it on Facebook, and talk about it. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. I'm getting over my cold. I hope you're getting over yours. Have a great week.